Look, Idlib province is the largest al-Qaeda safe haven since 9/11, tied directly to Ayman al-Zawahiri. This is a huge problem. It's been a problem for some time. Leaders of al-Qaeda that make their way to Idlib province often do not make their way out of there. But we have to ask a question: why and how is Ayman al-Zawahiri's deputy finding his way to Idlib province? Why is this happening? How are they getting there? They're not paratroopers. So, and the approach, I obviously will not talk about anything the US government has done in certain parts of Syria on this problem, but the approach by some of our partners to send in tens of thousands of tons of weapons and looking the other way as these foreign fighters come into Syria may not have been the best approach.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
June 1st, 2019. Thank you for joining me today. Yes, everything is live. I see that in the chat. We're going on DLive and everything. And that's a good point to make in the beginning of the show today for anybody new to this show. We're broadcasting on YouTube because that's where most people are being misled today. But we're also broadcasting on DLive and everything else. So if you'd prefer not to be on YouTube, feel free and check us out there. It's streaming live as it were right now. But thank you for joining me today. Definitely, I think today's story is something that right off the bat, like even just reading the title that I put, that is 100% accurate. That's not hyperbole. That's not my opinion. This is exactly what's happening and exactly what they just openly said they were going to do. But it's something that people would reflexively call fake news because they just don't want to believe this is happening. You know, the very group in Syria that the U.S. claims it's fighting, the claims responsible for 9/11, or at least an affiliate of, and now they're openly arming them. Something that I don't understand how people are going to rectify if they're still believing the state, but we'll get to that. We have more on Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency again coming out just recently and saying, yes, they're still compliant with the deal. And this is funny because I just talked about this the day before about previous times this happened. It's over and over. Every single time they've said they were compliant. Again, this happens with no real justification for why the U.S. claims they don't agree with their statement. Just, nope, that's not true. And we have more on Venezuela, but not what you might think. Very interesting information that was shared with me by Keith in the chat. Always sending me great information. That's very interesting stuff about rare earth minerals and how important this is to why they're there. But I also found it very relevant with the discussion of China today, which we'll get into. Ben Swan did a great video on it and how this all seems to tie together about control of these rare earth minerals in regard to our military industrial complex. Thank you for the super chat. But of course, to begin today, information about what's going on in Syria. The U.S. lying about their civilian deaths, as they always have. But the first story here is about arming the very terrorists the U.S. continues to maintain that they are fighting there. But we've seen this kind of dissolve over the last so many months, especially seeing Sky News literally embed themselves with Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is the group literally occupying Idlib that we just saw Brett McGurk talking about. Terrorists. On terrorist watch lists, but we're not supposed to talk about that now that they're arming them. This, of course, coming from Gray Zone, always doing a fantastic job. This one is entitled, U.S. Greenlights Missiles for Al-Qaeda-Linked Turkish-Backed Salafi Jihadists Occupying Syria's Idlib. 100% accurate in every possible way. The only thing, the only playing semantics in all this is people would argue that they're just rebels now. Just to forget that they were connected to or are still connected to Al-Qaeda. Forget all the very, very documentable, terrible things that we've shown that they have done. They're still doing right up until very recently, including killing civilians and all kinds of terrible things. But they want you to think these are just rebels. These are just rebels fighting the evil, villainous Syria and Russia, which is simply not the case. And even their own information from very, very recently contradicts what they're saying today. Backward world indeed. This is certainly where we are. Arming these very people is something that I really hope we can, especially people that are still tuning in, which I appreciate, but may not agree with what we're talking about. I hope this gets through to you to see what's actually happening here and you look past the cultivated lies of the state. Now, the Trump administration has indeed just approved heavy weapons for Al-Qaeda allied and Turkey-backed militants to specifically fight the Russian-backed offensive in Syria. The retaking, again, this point always gets left out of even their argument, retaking sovereign Syrian territory. Not just, you know, not taking territory from someone else or taking back what was rightfully theirs that was taken from them by U.S.-backed forces. But we don't talk about that part. Now, the Syrian army has relaunched a campaign, as we've been covering, to retake the northwestern province of Idlib, which has been under the control of Syria's al-Qaeda affiliate Hayat Tahrir al-Sham for more than 4 years. Now, Washington has responded by greenlighting a cache of U.S.-made anti-tank missiles, rocket launchers, and armored vehicles sent from NATO, or rather NATO ally, Turkey, to sectarian Islamist militants in Idlib. Now, yeah, you know, just for the sake of, just for maybe those, because we don't ever get that many tuned in right off the bat, I want to make sure and replay this for those that didn't see this. And I play this countless times. This is the very person that we're supposed to listen to talking about what's going on in this area before the narrative had kind of shifted. Well, this is when it still suited them to make sure that we thought it was really bad there. We needed to stay in Syria because these terrorists are really bad in this location. But now all of a sudden that they're defending them, the narrative has shifted. But here's what he had to say.
Look, Idlib province is the largest al-Qaeda safe haven since 9/11, tied directly to Ayman al-Zawahiri. This is a huge problem. It's been a problem for some time. Leaders of al-Qaeda that make their way to Idlib province often do not make their way out of there. But we have to ask a question, why and how is Ayman al-Zawahiri's deputy finding his way to Idlib province? Why is this happening? How are they getting there? They're not paratroopers. So, and the approach, I obviously will not talk about anything the U.S. government has done in certain parts of Syria on this problem, but the approach by some of our partners to send in tens of thousands of tons of weapons and looking the other way as these foreign fighters come into Syria may not have been the best approach.
Yeah, that's a very, very nice way to say that. It may not have been good that we just kind of allowed the terrorist occupation to happen here because it kind of suited our agenda at the moment. But this is the exact location we're talking about, and in fact, the exact group that we're talking about. How do you factor that in? They're literally arming these people now. And I just think that's something most people that are new to this really need to grasp. The U.S. government is arming terrorists. This is a fact that we need to wrap our minds around. As I keep pointing out, Tulsi Gabbard is currently running for president. And she says exactly this. She doesn't mince words here. The U.S. government is arming terrorists, the very people they pretend to fight. She introduced the Stop Arming Terrorists Act into Congress. Guess what? It got voted down. Go figure that one out. But this is real stuff that we need to recognize. And now they're arming these people and they're going to try to convince you that this is for the good. These are the good guys, you know, quasi good guys. Now, at this point, every American, really being honest with themselves, needs to ask the obvious question here. Is this just the U.S. government openly doing today what they've been actually doing all along? Now, I think you know the answer to this. As it's the moderate rebels myth, all this has been dispelled. We know this has been happening. But let's not get this confused here. Whatever the justification they may have, and they will, this is the U.S. government knowingly arming the very terrorist groups that they have been pretending to fight. And let's not forget that countless nations have accused the U.S. over the years of regularly doing exactly what they just did, or are green lighting their action. And the U.S. has always denied it. Always. And yet we're supposed to see this today and assume that all the other times were lies. And this is the first time. The first time we decided to do it. When we think about this, applies all the time with the fake news. Oh, no, all the troops going to the Middle East. No, that's fake news until we find out that it's not. It's just about cultivating how it comes out. And this is the same thing. They lie, they lie, they lie. But now it may, for some reason, suit their agenda to do it right out in the open. And we're just supposed to pretend that they denied it all the way up until now, and they just all of a sudden decided to do the very thing they've been denying. That makes a lot of sense. Certainly possible. But we need to use our logic here, people, and see how obviously ridiculous this stuff is. Thank you for the super chat. Now, as Ben Norton points out, this is not the first time American anti-tank missiles have ended up in the hands of Syria's extremist rebels. I mean, this is, which I knew you, I'm sure you knew it was coming. Asking the question, is this the first time? No, that's a hypothetical or a rhetorical question. The point is, we have evidence. This has happened numerous times. Right? And this is what he points out in the article very clearly. This is very obviously not the first time that these specific, even the very things they're sending now, in fact, ended up in the hands of these supposed rebels that we now see clearly were the worst people there. And kind of morphed into the very people there. I mean, it's the situation there is they use this whole the whole playing field and the claims therein from both angles, whenever and how it suits their agenda, the same way they use the law, the United Nations, they use it how they see fit against their adversaries and ignore whatever goes against what they want. This isn't just my opinion. It's documented day in and day out. Now, in March 2017, the Gray Zone, of course, published video and photographic evidence that showed rebranded Al-Qaeda, the group that they're funding right or arming right now and have been, by the way, showed them using U.S.-made anti-tank missiles to attack Syrian government-held territory. But of course, they denied this at the time, right? It was lies. All lies then. But now all of a sudden it's real. And we just lost the stream. How fantastic. Oh, pop back up. So I hope I didn't lose you guys there. I hope I didn't lose it and cut it into two videos like it often does. But it's they deny it until they're now doing it right in front of you. I just don't know how we can add that up. Now, not to mention that Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the Al-Qaeda, being an Al-Qaeda affiliate, is literally connected to the very group that the U.S. still absurdly maintains was behind 9/11. And remember that these claims were the catalyst for the now endless war on terror. More appropriately, the war of terror, as people like James Corbett would call it. Now, do you see the glaring contradiction here? The hypocrisy as usual? The reason the U.S. claims it has the right to illegally occupy Syria using Al-Qaeda as the excuse? Yet simultaneously, and now openly, arming them. I mean, you know, this is unbelievable that they still maintain and even mourn on 9/11 about how these people attacked us. And here they are, and not to mention they're also supporting and working with them in Yemen, working and supporting with them in numerous locations, but now here we are with them openly arming them. I'm sure we won't address this come next 9/11, right? Well, same old thing. Oh, we have Al-Qaeda, and it's a whole thing, and not to mention that all the other illegal countries that are being occupied are under the premise that this is the catalyst. And they're arming the people that they claim started this whole thing. I mean, how do you wrap your mind around that? Currently occupying Syria, helping the group that they're using to claim to occupy Syria. I mean, this is, talk about clown world. This is wildly backward. These people are wildly dishonest and doing it in every possible way. Of course, because they've sold the people on, at least some, on the idea that they're just entirely righteous and altruistic no matter what. Oh, that bad thing we just did and killed all those people? Trust me, it was for good. We were trying to do good, at least. Who actually believes that? Now, Russia had negotiated a so-called peace deal with Turkey in September 2018, and we've seen how that worked out. Turkey is militarily occupying part of northern Idlib, and the NATO member has constructed a dozen military bases in the Syrian province. Clearly, they had peace in mind, you can tell. But after 7 months, Turkey and its extremist proxies have still failed to uphold their side of this peace agreement. Now, I shouldn't have to point out the parallel here to what I'm constantly saying about the supposed peace agreement and the ceasefire happening in Yemen. Here again, we have another, let's just say NATO ally. I still think what Turkey's doing is somewhat in coordination with the U.S. That's just my opinion. But here again, we have a NATO ally feigning ceasefire and then using it to take more territory, exactly what U.S. and Saudi Arabia is doing to Yemen right now. And already has done. They're continually lying, not taking action while the Houthis do in good faith, as the UN has confirmed, even 3 days in a row, they confirmed they were doing it. The Saudis just lied and took more territory and killed more people with the US support. Same thing happening right here. Turkey just saying we're doing stuff and in fact continues to arm the terrorists and continues to support them and continues to take more territory. It's ridiculous. They literally just invaded Iraq under the claim that they're fighting terrorism. But after 7 months, Turkey and its extremist proxies have still failed to hold up this peace agreement, and we have to see that. I think this is very obviously because Turkey never had any intention of peace. Again, that's my opinion, but I think it's clear based on the actions here. Now, under the deal, the Syrian government was supposed to regain access by the end of 2018 to major highways running through Idlib that were particularly controlled by Islamist, you know, rebels again, the rebels. But Damascus still does not have authority over these important areas after all this time. I'm surprised that it's taken this long for them to challenge the supposed ceasefire and reinitiate their efforts on Idlib. Now, the peace agreement additionally stipulated that extremist militants in this demilitarized zone on the edge of Idlib were not allowed to launch attacks on the Syrian government-held territory. But again, seen how that's worked out. As I just covered in my interview with Vanessa Bealey, the U.S.-backed extremists have continued indiscriminately attacking civilian territories and areas controlled by Damascus. And it's documented. And yes, we have seen offensives by Syria and Russia as well. And on the flip side, I haven't actually seen documented evidence of the civilian casualties they claim happened. Remember, they were claimed by Hayat al-Sham, the group they claim connected to the people who attacked us on 9/11, are making claims that Sky News is running with. That makes sense. But it's certainly still possible, as Vanessa pointed out. We're talking about a war here. A war started by the United States and the Western powers, illegally occupying territory, and in the process of trying to take that back, knowing that the end result is ultimately better for all of Syria and Syrians therein, that it's possible that civilians are being killed. And it's also possible they're being held against their will in these terrorist-held areas. But just, we have to recognize all of this stuff. Now, after this obvious failure by Turkey, the Syrian army and Russian military reinitiated their efforts to take Idlib, which is what we're seeing now. Now, the Trump administration, of course, immediately condemned the Syrian-Russian campaign to retake Idlib from the al-Qaeda militants. Didn't care about the other times the people dying because of all the terrorist actions killing civilians and all the terrible things they were doing. And, of course, just bombing Syrian-Russian locations, which is also against the rules, supposed ceasefire. And the moment they start their efforts back in after all of that, of course they condemn their actions. How dare Russia and Syria respond to being attacked? I mean, it is. It's that comical. And we have to continue to see this, that this is the ridiculous nature of their ongoing claims. They ignore anything that doesn't go along with their agenda. Now, U.S. officials also claimed, as we've reported, without providing any evidence, big shock there, that the Syrian army was using chemical weapons in this offensive. Right? And this, of course, this wildly unsubstantiated accusation came at the time when, of course, a leaked OPCW report had suggested that a previous gas attack in Douma had been staged. And not, this had been. We've seen Theodore Postel from MIT. And this is now evidence that this was staged. We have the BBC producer admitting that it was staged. And we have the report that they intentionally withheld from people that also showed you that this was staged. That's what we're looking at here. And of course, when this report came out, chemical weapons in Syria somewhere, no evidence. Everybody look over there while we try to hide this thing that's making us look bad. And of course, right when they reinitiate their attacks or offensives on Idlib, that is when this chemical weapons thing comes out and it just disappears just as quickly. How weird is that? Served its purpose. Now, Reuters reported on May 25th that Turkey has ramped up its weapon supplies to the al-Qaeda-linked militants that occupy Idlib as well. Clearly they're working towards peace, I can tell. But so now we have that both groups supposedly trying to work for some kind of peace are now occupying and arming the very terrorists that they have long sought, claimed or you know, behind a lot of things from the past. This is absurd on its face. And all they're really hoping for is that you don't see, that you hear Hayat al-Sham and don't know who that is and say, oh, well, that's some random name I've never heard before. Oh, the U.S. says they're a rebel group helping us. Well, they must be good people. Just because they changed their name does not change the fact that they're terrorists that have done really, really disgustingly bad things and are affiliated with al-Qaeda. But they hope you don't know better. But that's why I'm here. Now, Turkey is sending these American-made heavy weapons to sectarian Sunni Islamist extremists from a coalition that calls itself the National Liberation Front. Now, this alliance, which was founded in May 2018 and which purports to be moderate, as they all do because they've gotten the talking points, claims to be part of the so-called Free Syrian Army and often fights embedded directly with the Turkish army. You see the crossover between all of this stuff? They're all just a bunch of names and acronyms that all basically end up saying NATO-backed extremists and associated forces therein that are illegally occupying Syria. This supposed moderate Free Syrian Army coalition is led by commanders from the Salafi jihadist militias, Arar al-Sham and Jaish al-Arar. Now, it also includes former al-Qaeda ally Nur al-Din al-Zinki, which is notorious for beheading pro-government fighters, and which was, you know, directly armed by the CIA. But we don't talk about that either. Now, today, the majority of Idlib remains under the control of the, as I said, rebranded version of Jabhat al-Nusra, the Nusra Front, that calls itself Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. This is the group. This is what we're talking about. This far-right extremist group has imposed harsh sectarian Islamist law on a once diverse and secular region. And this is something people often, especially if they watch mainstream media, have no idea about. That Syria, in general, had, I believe it was the second largest Christian population in all of the Middle East. A large population. And then in Iraq was a similar thing. We had talked about before. Saddam Hussein's inner party was the Ba'ath party. They were Christians. And now look at it. Now look at what's happening. Look at, you know, they claim they're fighting for good things, but a country that was once welcoming to Christians in these areas, at least that they're occupying, the supposed rebels helping the U.S., are bringing the exact opposite. Literally the exact opposite of what the U.S. claims is trying to do. Just like they've done every other time. But trust them this time, because that makes sense. Now, the analyst who runs the Within Syria blog highlighted a recent discussion on a Telegram channel from Idlib, in which supporters of the Turkish-backed FSA militants debated with supporters of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, you know, whether or not they should wage a war of terror on the civilian population. Because that's what, you know, good U.S.-backed rebels do on their free time. It literally says, should we bomb kindergartens, schools in government areas, or should we poison the drinking water in the coast, or bomb markets and hospitals, or, you know, do all of this? Hashtag so-and-so, smiley face, call me back. This is the ridiculous thing we're seeing. They're literally talking about, should we kill the kids? Should we bomb the schools? Should we poison the water? These are the U.S., this is the group the U.S. just gave missiles to, just gave trucks to, just gave anti-tow missiles. I mean, I can't understand this other than to understand that these people are always and have always been exactly what they claim they're fighting. It's time to wake up and see what they're really doing. Now, in a related story coming from anti-media about, you know, while they're literally arming the very people that are actually killing all these civilians and then also bombing areas and killing civilians, coming from anti-media, U.S. remains in denial about how many civilians they killed in Iraq and Syria. Of course. Remained in denial. This is the frustrating part about this. That we've seen this, we've known this for a very long time. We've had this ongoing. They lie, they change the number, and then all the information comes out and shows that they're lying. On and on and on, and they just continue to do it. And now this is coming out again, and you won't believe the numbers. You will not believe what they're claiming. The U.S. coalition, of course, that same coalition that launched untold amounts of destructive airstrikes against Iraq and Syria, admitted Friday that those attacks killed civilians. But the number they reported was 1,302 in a nearly five-year period and was immediately dismissed as too low by the human rights organization Amnesty International. It says, quote, while all admissions of responsibility by the U.S.-led coalition for civilian casualties are welcome, the coalition remains deeply in denial about the devastating scale of the civilian casualties caused by their operations in both Iraq and Syria. This is from the group's senior crisis advisor, Donatella Rivera. Now, the coalition said that in the airstrikes, that they ultimately said that the 34,502 airstrikes, quote, between August and 2014 and the end of April 2019, it found that, quote, at least it says 1,302 civilians have been unintentionally killed by the coalition. You see, there's two caveats there, right? At least, so that means it's possibly 50,000, right? At least this many, at least one, we can tell you that. And then civilians that have been unintentionally killed. So that puts two caveats in there. The number could be much bigger, and we're only tallying the ones that we think that we would claim unintentional. So, you know, that when we intentionally killed civilians, we leave those out. And we pretend they're not civilians, we also leave that out. Now, that number is still far below projections from other organizations over the past. I mean, even a single person killed is too much, by and large. But what they're saying is the number is way, way, way too low. Now, it says, quote, "And even in cases where the coalition has admitted responsibility, this has only happened after civilian deaths were investigated and brought to its attention by organizations such as Amnesty International and Air Wars." Like, basically saying that, yeah, you know, you claim that they're going to change this stuff and admit to these things, and, oh, we're trying to do our best, but it only happens when you force them to. When you dive in to the investigation and you show them, look, you're lying about this. When they go, oh, well, yeah, okay, here, I'll give you a quarter of that. Like they're in some kind of a deal. So why and then would we then assume that they're going to be forthcoming about things if they've only ever been so when you expose their lies? Which perfectly parallels with what's going on with Assange. See, they don't want you to be able to expose their lies. Now, in April, a study by Amnesty and Air Wars projected that 1,600 civilians died in coalition airstrikes in the Syrian city of Raqqa alone from June to October 2017, a number that in 4 months is higher than the coalition's total findings for over 4 years across two countries. So just in this month period, this four-month period, their number is four. I mean, that's, do you really think that the 1,300 number is accurate? When, I mean, this is just one look. There's groups you could find that have even higher numbers. We have to see what's going on. They're lying to us about killing civilians because it challenges their narrative of them going around saving civilians. It says, quote, "We hope to finally see an honest assessment of the devastating impact the U.S. lethal strikes have had on the civilians in Raqqa." This again, this is Daphne Evitar, director of the Amnesty's Security with Human Rights program. She said the public deserves to know how many civilian casualties our government's responsible for, and the survivors deserve acknowledgement, reparations, and appropriate, where appropriate, and meaningful assistance to rebuild their lives. You know, it's you would think this kind of thing is a no-brainer, right? That you shouldn't have to sell people on the reality that we need to know what's really happening, that we need to know whether or not our government is arbitrarily and indiscriminately killing civilians as it sees fit to achieve its goals, right? We need to know this kind of stuff. But no, they obviously don't think we need to know this kind of stuff. And that should alarm you, truly. Now, to skip over to Iran, and again, as I always point out, all of this stuff is extremely connected. All of it, from Venezuela to Iran to Israel to Yemen, all of this stuff is connected. And hopefully you're beginning to see that. But as I said, and as I've continued to point out, the IAEA has continued to confirm that Iran is in fact completely compliant with the nuclear deal, even after the U.S. has pulled out of it, if you can believe that. Even though they're actually able to go a different direction. No, but they're not. They're trying to show the world they're not what the U.S. says they are, because it's pretty clear to me that they're not. But the International Agency of Atomic Energy has continued to say that they're compliant all the way up until today. Guess what? Iran continues to comply with nuclear deal limits. And the U.S. is still maintaining their lies over and over and over. And this stuff is right in their face. Now, the IAEA has issued their latest regular statement on the P5 plus one nuclear deal, the JCPOA, with Iran, confirming that once again, Iran remains in full compliance, that's their words, with all of the limits on the deal. And again, as I just showed, this has consistently been the case since the deal went into effect from the very beginning. So ask yourself why and how they've been lying this entire time. Now, even with Iran removing some voluntary limits on production and boosting the number of advanced centrifuges in use, Iran remained below stockpile limits on heavy water and far below the stockpile limits on low-enriched uranium. Now, we talked about this already. This was the voluntary limits. This stuff changed when the U.S. pulled out of the deal. It allowed this to be, this is right, and I point as I continue to say, don't just listen to what Trump and the administration has to say about it. Read the deal, and you'll see immediately that they're lying. They just don't think anyone's going to take the time to do it. Because the U.S. unilaterally pulled out of the deal, it changed things. And even now still, what they're saying is they're still compliant with the deal, even after that. Now, the language on centrifuge limits in the deal is somewhat vague with respect to swapping out older centrifuges for better ones. But the IAEA did say that they have questions what the terms of the deal actually mean, though they have no reason to believe that anything so far was a violation. Now, the U.S. has been keen to spin Iran as being in violation. This is what they've been doing since the beginning, and sometimes explicitly claim violations that don't exist. Right in the beginning, as I pointed out, they continue to say, oh, they're making nuclear weapons. They have nuclear weapons. And then once that got very clearly shown to be false, they just kind of shifted over to ballistic missiles and said, well, you know, they're still doing bad things and they're dangerous. It's shocking. Now, the IAEA, particularly since the U.S. withdrew from the pact, has been particularly determined to point out that Iran remains in compliance. Maybe that's because it's the truth, and maybe that's because this is what their job is, you know, to actually uphold the reality of the situation. And maybe they actually care about that, unlike many, many people today that simply don't care and will lie as it suits their agenda as they see fit. It's a lot today, quite a bit. Now, for the final story of the day, kind of tying in with that last statement, too, all these groups lying and manipulating to overthrow governments, and they don't care how many people they kill in the process. For the last article, coming from Venezuela Analysis, as well as intermingled with some great information that was shared with me by somebody in the chat. Keith is constantly sending me fantastic stuff. And I, by the way, for anyone that wants to, please send me ryan@thelastamericanvagabond.com. There's no better way to crowdsource information than to spread, you know, continue to send me in things that you think are important. Now, this is an important story because it talks about not only does this tie in with what's recently happening with tariffs in China and the rare earth metals, but it also shows you that there's a lot more going on under the ground in Venezuela, and it ties in a lot more with U.S. and their agenda than they want you to know. Not just the massive oil and gold supplies, but also rare earth metals that the U.S. greatly needs. How interesting is that? But see, they don't want you to know that they greatly need this stuff, because then it gives them, like would you in a court of law, it gives them motive. Not like they need it anymore, but this just adds to the list of why they're clearly doing what they're doing there. The article begins, is any threat posed by Venezuela merely an illusion created to oil the wheels of intervention? Which is an honest question we should be asking. Right? All the threats they're claiming are coming from Venezuela. Is this just simply a manufactured illusion to grease the wheels of intervention, as they put it? Because they've seen this before. So to just blindly say that's not happening is to be naive, knowing that they have in fact done this before. Now, what is real and tangible is the U.S.'s increased demand for the natural resources Venezuela has in a superabundance. Now, resource wealth can be a blessing and a curse. Not only is Venezuela the fifth largest oil exporting country in the world, as the article said, it was the second largest reserve of heavy crude oil. I was under the impression it was the first. Either way, a massive reserve of crude oil, first or second, in the world, as well as the second largest gold reserve in the world. But also add to that the country's rich mineral reserves that we haven't heard anyone talk about. And then the desire of other powerful nations to, of course, control that wealth. And there you have a recipe for what they called resource curse. Now, Venezuela sits on mineral reserves of gold, iron ore, diamonds, coal, uranium, and the precious mineral coltan. All the other ones before are more than enough to justify for people such as these profiteering government officials, more than enough to justify their lies to overthrow a country. But the precious mineral coltan is very interesting. This is what they call blue gold. And how this ties into electronics and military technology, how important it is to the U.S., they would never want you to know. Because it shows you clearly that this is at least in part a reason why they're trying to control this area. Now, coltan is Venezuela's, they call it oro azul, as I said, blue gold. In 2009, President Hugo Chavez announced the discovery of reserves worth over $100 billion worth of, quote, the blue gold of the 21st century, he called it, in the Amazon region of the country. Now, the price of this blue gold follows as increasing demand for a high-grade metal known as tantalum. I believe that's how it's pronounced, tantalum, processed from refined coltan. Now, demand for coltan is so intense, it fetches a higher price on the international market than even gold or diamonds today. So in that same vein of thought, ask yourself why you've never even heard of this. It's more valuable than gold and diamonds, and is very important to military technology. Maybe that's exactly why you haven't heard about it. Tantalum or coltan, being in the same vein. Now, this is, just add this to the list of all the things that we've continued to talk about of why they might want to do what they're doing in Venezuela and manufacture all of the lies. It becomes very difficult not to see this for what it is. Now, tantalum is the metal used in capacitors that store energy in modern electronics. You can see how that's important, like smartphones and tablets. Now, tantalum capacitors are also essential in powering modern military weaponry because the metal-resistant corrosion, it resists corrosion and it can withstand the extreme temperatures generated by the new military applications. Now, without it, weapon systems would overheat. Clearly a very important thing. Now, the U.S. relies on tantalum to build the basic circuitry in guidance control systems in its smart bombs, the onboard navigational systems in drones, anti-tank systems, robots, and most weapon systems. I mean, you cannot overstate the importance of this specific mineral to specifically the United States. The metal is vital, absolutely vital to U.S. defense. Yet, it has no domestic source of coltan. So importing and stockpiling tantalum is its only recourse. Okay, so we can see that the U.S. has no source for coltan from the U.S. We can see that they basically have to import it and stockpile it to even make sure that they can continue with their and understand how much they need, seeing as how this country spends more on its military than every other country combined. So they could need a lot of it, wouldn't you say? So what do you think that might cause them to do, knowing that Venezuela was going in a different direction? Maybe you think that they need this to control the coltan supply? Because if they didn't have this, it would immediately stop what they're trying to accomplish all around the world, all the terrible things they're doing. As the need for tantalum increases, interestingly, smugglers move coltan from Venezuela to the United States via Colombia and Brazil. Interesting how this all lines up with this agenda we've been seeing. And they're literally paying, first of all, we have to understand that we're talking about the U.S. illicitly helping smugglers bring in coltan from Venezuela. And so now it looks like they're probably just trying to set something up, in my opinion, to have to just say, screw it. We're done trying to smuggle this in pieces and stockpile it. We're going to take Venezuela and make this ours. Now, most importantly, what is driving illegal mining? The article asks. Who is paying out for smuggled Venezuelan coltan ore? Feeding the smelters, buying from refiners, and stockpiling large quantities of tantalum. Clearly, we're talking about the United States. Tablets and smartphones amount to only a part of the coltan market, though. But we know for a fact that there is a documented high demand for tantalum by the U.S. defense industry. That's motive for you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, a recent 60 Minutes episode describes the threat that China poses to U.S. national security. Not because of tantalum, but from other rare earth elements. Now, China is the world's single source of these elements. U.S. defense systems depend on rare earth elements needed in manufacturing Tomahawk cruise missiles, lasers, and guided systems on weapons. In other words, the U.S. depends on China for its weaponry. But do you see the connection here? Is it possible that what we're talking about is recognizing the threat building from China and their ability to shut down this flow of earth minerals the U.S. absolutely needs in order to carry out their military agendas? And so instead they said, well, we can recognize a source in Venezuela. So maybe this was all part of the plan. That's just me, my opinion, but these are questions we should be asking. Here's a quick clip from Ben Swan and what he had to say about it. It's important to recognize how important this is, and I think these things are connected. Certainly my opinion, but you'll see what I'm talking about.
Now, according to a Bloomberg report, the U.S. relies on China for about 80% of its rare earth needs.
F-35, one of the most advanced fighter jets in the world, would be significantly impacted by this. I mean, Scotty, we're talking about this. About 1,000 pounds of these rare earth materials are used to construct just one F-35 fighter jet. So it gives you an idea of how much these minerals and materials are needed, and whether or not the U.S. is willing to play along or back down as a result of this comes down to whether or not you want a disruption in the military market.
A disruption in the military market. This is very important to understand how why also other countries might play a factor in this to try to shut down what the U.S. is doing. But we have to see the parallel here. As the U.S. is in this trade war with China, the point in this, and what he's saying in the video, which is in the show notes, which I recommend you watch further, and I may even talk about in a future video, the very serious danger that the U.S. faces right now if China decides to just shut down its flow of rare earth minerals. As Ben said in the video, they control about 90% of the world's supply of exactly what the U.S. needs. So think about what that means, and when this is Trump poking the bear and what might happen, and maybe that's why they're planning ahead in going after Venezuela. Certainly something to think about. Now, following this logic, for Venezuela to derail coltan smugglers en route to the United States via Colombia and Brazil, which the Venezuelan government has actually been trying to do and doing, could actually jeopardize the Pentagon's cache of tantalum from refined coltan. Which clearly, now that we're seeing Venezuela stop this illegal smuggling flow, that also could have been the catalyst for why they recognized, if they did stop this flow, that it would also shut down their military agendas, and they need the tantalum, they need the coltan to carry these things out. So once Venezuela continued to stop this, maybe that was also what triggered them to take this. So either way, we recognize they are indeed trying to take Venezuela, and clearly are trying to take their resources. And this is just adding to that growing list of reasons. Now, advances in military technology and the obsession with armed drones will not curb the craving for tantalum, as the article pointed out. All the more reasons to follow the minerals. Watch where this goes and see how this plays out. Now, on this same vein of thought, and this is even more interesting, in the very same idea, there's another mineral from Venezuelan soil that could also be extremely valuable. But or that maybe the United States has designs to take control of as well, and its name is thorium, or thorium. And it has the potential to become an ecological nuclear fuel. Yeah, because that's not valuable at all. This was also shared with me by Keith in the chat. Thank you for sharing this stuff, because this is powerful information. Now, Professor Eduardo Greaves, an expert in nuclear physics and a professor at Simón Bolívar University, pointed out that Venezuela has a, quote, huge deposit of thorium in the southern state of Amazonas, which is part of the Orinoco mining arc, of which China knows all about, having directed the development of the geological and mining map of the Venezuelan territory. But remember, before people start pulling their hair out, that this was agreed upon between Venezuela and China, which doesn't make it any better for the U.S. interest, but the point is that they don't have any right to say they can't do that. And clearly China's going to benefit greatly from this, but it was an agreed-upon deal between two allies. End of story. Doesn't make it any less nefarious to see what China's trying to do as well, but I'm just trying to... The point is we can't continue to justify illegal U.S. actions by claiming that, look, we don't want those two people together. Now, Greaves said these reserves could be used in thorium nuclear reactors for at least 300 years. I mean, this is powerfully important to see how this could be used. And this kind of thing, if is what they're saying it is, this could reshape our world in terms of technology, or rather energy. And you can see clearly in a lot of ways, especially the U.S. being wildly stagnant when it comes to energy, because they've got a control on it right now, that they don't want this to happen. Now, China has set its sights on this mineral, which can potentially become the green energy of the future. Now, I'm not extremely well-versed on this. This is what they're saying about it. I can't testify to the actual idea of it being a green energy, but the point is this is the importance of this mineral. And clearly countries like China and the United States, they recognize that. Now, in addition, China and India were the first countries to have a thorium reactor. So in clearly showing that this is indeed a reality, that it can be used for exactly this. Now, China plans to use that reactor to build a pilot thorium plant by 2020. Now, with the hopes of replacing coal energy and nuclear energy. Think about that. So basically, we should ask the question, is this about the United States trying to control the new energy? Possibly. Is this about them trying to stop China from controlling the energy, or maybe even simply stop it all and maintain their nuclear and energy dominance? All of these things would make perfect sense and fit in exactly with what U.S.'s government actions have been in the past. If they think there's a threat to their energy dominance, they would consider that a national security threat. And so maybe this is exactly why Obama said Venezuela posed a significant security threat or whatever he said, which is ridiculous, all back when he did that. Maybe this is all tying together. But ultimately, we can see that this is a very important reason for a country to, or rather a motivator for a country to take control of another sovereign nation. Now, in 2016, China planned to build at least 30 nuclear reactors in the next 15 years in countries that are part of the Belt and Road Initiative. Now, they have 33 reactors currently in use and 22 under construction. Now, according to data from the International Atomic Energy Agency, which we just talked about, thorium reactors are very much part of their strategy to replace fossil fuels in the region, in the future, really. And I think this is obviously, in my opinion, why this is something the U.S. wants to stop. And you could even argue why this problem, that might even be a, if you think China's interests are that much countering what the U.S. is trying to do, which just seems likely. You can make a clear case for why this is a threat to United States government, dominance in the world. But when it comes down to the average American, it's quite a different story. Now, thorium reactors thorium specifically, and the reactors built around that is what this is really all about, and China using them is what I think anyway. And recently, Maduro said that China will finance the growth of oil production in the country, in Venezuela, but didn't mention contracts of the mining area. So I think it's clear that they can recognize that the U.S. has an eye on this. Now, Maduro stated on TV, quote, "There are financial commitments for the growth of oil production, the growth of gold production, and investments in more than 500 development projects within Venezuela," and leaves it ambiguous. Didn't provide any more details. So clearly that could be included in this 500 development project discussion. Now, apparently, this makes all the more sense in regard to the U.S. potentially trying to shut down this new energy, as opposed to control it or stop China, but just simply shut it down from ever happening. The same way we've seen them do with technology in the past. People like Tesla, or all kinds of different things. Maintaining the fact that we have to live with fossil fuels, the fact that we need these things to make sure that we need them, to maintain that, make sure that they have control over the energy market. It's something we have to see, but I think they're trying to shut this down. Now, as the article points out, the military-industrial complex managed to destroy this in budding new green energy, destroy this budding new green energy in its infancy in the United States back in the 1970s. Again, why we've never even heard of this. And we can already see that right now, we can see this threatens what they're trying to do, and we have a precedent for it as the military-industrial complex has already shut this down once in the 70s as it was budding. You know, God forbid we want a green energy that's not terrible for the world. Now, the author points out that thorium does not decay into weapons-grade material, so guess what? It's not of use to them. You see, because the U.S. is wanting it for weapons, offenses, war. Because it's a war-focused country, the government anyway. And so knowing that you can't use thorium to turn into weapons eventually, so they said, screw it, we'll maintain our control over this and make sure China and whoever else can't get this, or at least they'll try. Again, that's just what I'm seeing from this. But we have to see that they've already shut it down once. They're currently trying to overthrow Venezuela, and this is a very important factor in all of this. Now, as Keith in the chat shared with me, he said the key features of thorium. One, a nuclear meltdown is nearly impossible. Gee, that would be nice. The reactors produce 0.1% of the nuclear waste that a conventional reactor produces. Gee, that sounds much better. We're talking about things that are very dangerous for the planet. This produces 0.1% of the waste the other ones do. Now, the reactor can actually be repurposed to burn nuclear waste from conventional uranium reactors. So not only is it less waste, but it can be repurposed to actually take care of other problems. But you see, no, because what the U.S. wants is that waste to be able to make weapons. It's all about war and weapons, right? Because the country claiming to be trying to save everybody and rescue civilians and spread democracy and liberty is trying to build weapons at all costs. Because that makes sense. We got to see what's really happening here. It's very important that we recognize where this is all going and why they're doing these things as they pretend to be fighting for civilians. They pretend to be fighting for liberty as they continue to do the exact opposite in just about every place you can look today. While they're arming the groups that they still use as the justification for occupying the country that they're in. You can't wrap. I mean, this stuff is unbelievable today. If you can't see the stuff we're talking about today and recognize that the mainstream media is lying to you, I don't know what else I can do to save you. But I'll keep trying because that's what I'm here for. Well, thank you so much for tuning in today. Please get this information out. I was actually on No More News today. I'll try and include that link in the show notes. Make sure you check that out. We talked about a lot of important things. Make sure you include that so you can go and also go subscribe to his channel. Make sure you check out his videos as well. I love you all. Thank you for being here today. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.